Hey folks, it's Adam Sommer. This week on the Heartland Pod, I've got an opening statement about the Establishment Clause. Then Sean Diller joins me for Talking Politics. No Rachel Parker this week. She gets the week off to celebrate her birthday. Happy birthday, Rachel. We're going to jump into stories mostly ranging out of Missouri. We're going to have a good time with a gas price versus abortion debate. We've got August Bush III giving money out to folks. We've got Democrats trying to spend money. And then we've got whether or not there's democracy left in the world at all. Lots to get to, so let's go. Welcome back to the Heartland Pod. My name is Adam Sommer. I am your host. Thank you all for joining us. We are so glad to have you with us. Find us on the social medias with the Heartland Pod. You can search us pretty much everywhere, the Heartland Pod, and you're going to find us on Twitter at the Heartland Pod. Email us anytime, heartlandpod2020@gmail.com. Help us book you as a guest or somebody else as a guest, or if you got questions, want some information, want to know what's going on, we want to hear from you, heartlandpod2020@gmail.com. You can also find links to our shows and a link to sign up for our Patreon over at heartlandpod.com. You can really find everything if you start there. If you want to tell somebody about the show, you want to share it with them, that's an easy way to do it, is heartlandpod.com. Great way to do that. Link in the show notes always to that website. If to support this independent family of shows, we're working hard to help change that conversation right here in the Heartland, here in Missouri, all around. Lift up voices you might not otherwise get to hear from, and bring a political perspective that, it's hard to get it out there. There's folks that, thank goodness that Jason Kander hopped on a microphone. I think it's been great for folks like us in the Midwest and told us all to grab an oar. And they do a really good job of talking about mostly national issues. And that's, it's really what they're good at, and they're well-researched. And other than that, most of what you're going to find is coming from the coast, right? Or folks who come from the coast, something like that. So help us change that conversation if you can. Go over to heartlandpod.com, check out our Patreon. Lots of good stuff over there. If you're a Patreon subscriber, then first of all, thank you. But second of all, if you're a Patreon subscriber, you know more about our live event than anybody else does. Live event, June 11th, Stevens Lake Park, Columbia, Missouri. I'm going to be there. Sean's going to be there. Rachel's going to be there. Nicholas Linke's going to be there. Kevin Smith's going to be there. It's going to be an awesome time. We're going to have a panel. Well, I'm not telling you right now who it is. Patreon folks are going to know before everybody else. But we have a panel. They're lined up. They've committed. And they're great. Let's just say, if you're interested in Missouri politics, this panel is for you. Because it is a heck of a panel. And I think they're going to be a lot of fun. And then we're going to have a live show, a live episode of Talking Politics. And we're going to take audience questions. It's going to be a great time. So it's going to be an excellent, excellent day. June 11th, Stevens Lake Park in Columbia. You can check Twitter. We have a link to sign up for it there. You can also go to our website and find information there. Or just show up. We like to have a head count, but otherwise just show up Stevens Lake Park on June 11th. If you just hang out in the park all day, eventually you'll find us, but it's going to be, later in the day around 4 o'clock, you're going to want to find the amphitheater and hang out over there. We're going to have a good time. Shout out to our progressives, our highest level of supporters. We don't have a huge group of folks. This is not a massive money-making endeavor for us. Don't get me wrong. It's a wonderful pipe dream to think that one day I could do this for a living. But that's not the plan. The plan is to do this because we can make a difference. And the money that we're getting right now is helping us do things like put on the live event, get some merchandise for folks, get the word out more. So thank you to our top-level progressives, Ann Marshall, Donna Ziegler, Jenna Robertson, excuse me, I know I'm getting that wrong, and yet I still do it. I'm sorry, Jenna. Mary Angelina, Alan Harris Dalt, Derek Wedding King, neighbor Derek, as you know him on this show, and Lindsay Simmons, one of our original best friends of the show. Thank you so much to all of those folks for what you do. Let's get to the opening statement, and we'll get to talking politics. Establishing the Establishment Clause. During 1789, George Washington was serving his first year as the first president of the United States. He was touring New England. A group of ministers wrote to him that they would rejoice in seeing explicit acknowledgement of the only true God and Jesus Christ inserted into the Magna Charta of our country. That reference being to the Constitution, which had just been written just a couple years before. Washington disagreed. This was in line with his writing for the many years before that, with quotes like, "While we are contending for our own liberty, we should be very cautious not to violate the rights of conscience in others." He wrote that in 1775. He was known for attending various church services himself of different denominations, even different religions. In a letter after the war seeking paid workers for his own needs, Washington wrote, "If they are good workmen, they may be of Asia, Africa, or Europe. They may be Muslims, Jews, or Christians of any sect, and they may be atheists." Most stirringly, in 1789, he wrote to the United Baptist Churches of Virginia, "No one would be more zealous than myself to establish effective barriers against the horrors of spiritual tyranny and every species of religious persecution." Thomas Jefferson wrote to the Dansbury Baptists using that famous phrase, "the wall of separation between church and state," in reference to the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. I will contend that much of the twisting of the founders' words on religion leaves out a very important component. They have relied heavily on their belief in a divine right as conquerors when dealing with natives and slaves. The most common citation to religion was paired with a justification for the most barbaric behavior. Still, the Establishment Clause is sometimes used to mean more than it provides. Recall that the Church of England was a crushing force of King George, used to rake the colonists for taxes and loyalty to the only allowable English religion. But America had become this religious retreat for so many sects, a place where one could choose their own free will if, when, how they may choose, or for that matter not choose, to worship or even believe in the first place. There was no requirement that new entrants to the colonies prove their belief in anything. There was no requirement to prove faith to participate in society. There was no religious test to be a citizen, a value that was then enshrined in the Constitution itself, that no office should include a religious test as a qualification. The two things, a secular government and religious freedom, they go hand in hand. The First Amendment, adopted in 1791, leads with the Establishment Clause. It's the first part of the First Amendment that they made to that document, to that Constitution, that Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion. By 1833, every single state had adopted similar language to disestablish religion from government. And later the 14th Amendment, which now comes under fire, was applied to the states with all the amendments. It's interesting to hear folks who talk about the Second Amendment as if it's this blanket protection, even though the Second Amendment begins with the words, "a well-regulated militia." The First Amendment doesn't begin with anything like that, that Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion. Put simply, you, me, your congressperson, senator, the president, each person to their own conscience is afforded liberty of thought and belief. The government as a whole is prohibited from favoring any single one of those beliefs. Madison and Jefferson believed there could be no religious freedom without separation. Jefferson's wall metaphor was borrowed from Roger Williams, the founder of Rhode Island, who in 1635 said there must be a wall or hedge of separation between the wilderness of the world and the garden of the church. You see, that's the thing about digging backwards for old writings like Justice Alito did, is it doesn't take that long to figure out that there's other stuff out there that contradicts the kind of things that he's using to turn the dial back on the time of the country. Regressive policies can be found in the 1600s, so can progressive policies too. History can be twisted so easily. And yet we may be relied upon to make such massive decisions. Most troubling to me personally is that more and more we see this separation, this wall, it's being turned into a fake form of persecution. Keeping our government free from rule by religion isn't persecution. Keeping the government free from rule by religion is not anti-American. Keeping the government free from rule by religion is not against our founding values. It is the opposite. Keeping the government free from rule by religion, any religion, is the very essence of America. It is the very essence of freedom. It is the very essence of liberty. Those who seem so intent on forcing all Americans to share one belief do not advance the cause of liberty with their efforts. They stifle its very existence. They snuff it out at the source, wanting to leave us with only one answer to the great questions that life poses. Scared to even think that somebody might disagree with them. Scared of the very freedom that they cry so hard and so loudly about loving and caring about so much. Freedom of conscience is the essence of all freedom. Without it, we can have none. Freedom of conscience is the ballgame. And some folks are coming for it. And that matters. Here's Talking Politics.
Talking Politics.
All right, we're here for Talking Politics. And it's just Sean and I this week. Rachel has the week off. Rachel is enjoying a birthday celebration. So happy birthday to Rachel. This is her second birthday with us now. So that's a big deal. Like, that's how long we've been doing this. Is like, I remember Rachel's birthday last year, and I hadn't even known Rachel until last year. So.
Still never even met Rachel in person.
I know. Yeah. That's crazy. So wild, but it's coming up June 11th at the very least. Columbia, Stevens Lake Park. It's going to be a great time. Make sure you check it out. We've got links on Twitter to sign up, and we'll make sure it gets out there and gets added to the website and all that. But yeah, June 11th, Stevens Lake Park. We'll be there live and in person. We have a confirmed panel on that day, and it's going to be very good. Stay tuned to find out what the panel is. But if you listen to this show, let me just say, you're going to like it a lot, I think. I think you've seen the panel, Sean. I think you can confirm.
Yeah, if the third name is who I think it is.
Yeah, it is.
Like from St. Louis?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's going to be quite good.
Bizarre and yeah. Insane, and yeah. I'm thinking fireworks, really. Yeah,
It's a good panel. It's going to be good stuff. So
I shouldn't have said bizarre. I don't want it to seem in any way like...
Yeah, it's not weird. Yeah, it's good stuff. It's a good group of folks. All people that I think people who listen to the show will appreciate getting to see talk, and then we'll do a live Talking Politics, and we're gonna have some music at the end, and we're just gonna have a good time. We're gonna, like I said, I tweeted it the other day, we're putting the fun back in politics. That's how it was spelled in olden times, polyphonics. And so it's not true, but you know, I just because of all the abortion stuff with the Roe case, or the Dobbs case, there's all, you know, Roberts is quoting all this old, like, right, dumb shit from the 1600s.
Yeah. The donkey childe. Yeah. A donkey childe could become king.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, when you read the way they used to spell old words, it's just like,
right,
what? Like, where are all these letters coming from? So I don't know. I assume at some point somebody spelled politics that way. So we're going to put the fun back in politics.
Put it back.
So, yeah, where it belongs. All right. Sean, how was your week, man? How you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for asking. It is Sunday as we're recording. And so I had a perfect spring Sunday with my two little girls. We did a lot of bubbles.
Nice.
And we played catch with a little green rubber ball.
Sure.
And
ball that you're not sure where it came from, and you won't know when it's gone, but one day
right,
it's gone. You won't know where it went.
Literally, I have no idea where it came from. Yeah.
That's awesome. Bubbles are so impressive. Like, of all the things that can hold a child's imagination and attention, you know, for extended periods with
almost no effort.
We should
all be doing bubbles. Yeah. I mean, I don't even, it's not even just for kids. I think The experience is the same.
It is the same. It is, because you do bubbles long enough with the kids, like you find yourself eventually one of them comes near you and you wave at it, like you go right. for it, like a cat.
As soon as you blow that string of bubbles through the thing, you're like, oh wow,
yeah,
that was awesome. Let me put my beer down.
I think I can get a bigger this. One. Yeah, right. I think I can blow more. Right. That's exactly right. I would have liked to have some bubbles. We were in Herman this weekend. Shout out to the Missouri Rhineland. And I don't care if they could bring soil over from the Bordeaux region and drop it in Augusta. I will never call Augusta the Napa or whatever of Missouri. It's Herman. Right. It's Herman. Right. It's Herman. It's Stonehill. That's where it's at, people. So we spent the weekend at Herman, did the trolleys, did the wineries and all that good stuff, and we were at Adam Pukta Winery to start, and they've got some cats hanging about, lazing about, good winery cats, and this one came down to join us, and we had some Colby Jack cheese, and we gave him a couple little pieces of Colby Jack, and he hung out on the table, and I wish I had had some bubbles, because I feel like he would have enjoyed
gosh,
or he would have hated it.
Yeah,
I feel like that's only it's either or with cats.
Stonehill is perfect for bubbles. Yeah.
Yeah. Stonehill would be awesome for bubbles. You're right. That would be a great place to have bubbles. But let's adjust to what is not a great place to have bubbles. And let's get into these topics here. So our true false.
True or false.
Gas prices and inflation will matter more than abortion in 2022's midterms. Obviously right now there's still a lot of post Dobbs leak anger and activism going on, and that's probably great, and I hope it continues, and I hope people can keep up the energy. It's, you know, it's barely the middle of May, that we've got several months until the midterms hit, so can folks keep up that energy? You know, does the opinion come out? And is it the opinion that was leaked, or is it a different opinion that actually doesn't do what the leaked opinion purported to do? And does that take some air out of the sails, or, you know, how does that go? Because we, you know, the fact that Democrats haven't been out there fighting, to me, that it took something like this to get them to recognize this important issue, when in 2016, anybody who understood the courts was shouting from the mountaintops, you have to vote for Hillary Clinton, because if you don't vote for Hillary Clinton, this person's going to put anybody in, you know, on the court who's even remotely qualified to do exactly right. this. And people were still like, I just don't know. I just don't like her very much. So I don't know. What do you think, man?
Yeah, it's a great, great question, because there's going to be insane amounts of money poured into people predicting the answer and how's it going between now and the election. Republicans obviously want people to be talking about gas prices and inflation.
Yeah.
And the way I think about it is, you know, it's not just what people are talking about or what story, because when you're counting up votes, people only have one vote. So the way I always think about it is, it's the question of the election. And, you know, if you're a high level campaign, you have some kind of role in framing or defining what the question actually is, but also Absolutely. Events. Yeah. So, you know, Republicans want people to walk into the voting booth thinking, who can do something about inflation?
Right.
And
or at least I am upset about inflation.
Right.
Right. They may not even care about what the answer is, just so that as long as they're blaming somebody for the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No. So, I mean, I think that was the trajectory we were headed towards. I mean, there's nothing else even close to as on people's minds. And right. then abortion happens, you know, this Dobbs leak, and the opinion won't even come out until June. So like, right. this is going to stay in the news. Right. Right. And it could even it could be the end of June. And I guess, do they sometimes?
It could get into July. Yeah. It's possible that could happen.
Yeah. But so Susan Page at USA Today was on Washington Week, and she's really, really smart. And what she mentioned was that the energy around, when it comes to the abortion issue, the energy has, for the last 50 years, has been on the anti-abortion side.
Right.
They've had this thing that they want to do. Let's make abortion illegal. Let's overturn Roe versus Wade. And they've been working on this for 50 years. There've been a ton of people, you know, folks in red states have been complaining for so long about single issue pro-life voters, and there are scads of them. So this decision, I think, thanks. This might or might not create a bunch of new single issue pro-choice voters, or you know, specifically like married white women who might not have voted Democrat before, thinking that this is important enough to cross party lines. And so, and I say that set specifically because, you know, white women voted for Trump by, I think, 12 points over Hillary Clinton. And then when you add married white women to that, it goes even higher. And, you know, married folks in general have been the GOP's bread and butter. So, and you know, a lot of the women who end up getting abortions are married and already have kids. And so I think it is abortion that is going to be the bigger issue. I think it's going to decide what happens.
I did not expect that from you. I did not expect that from you at all.
Yeah. I mean, every day that goes by, go ahead.
Well, the reason for that is I still think it's something that people don't necessarily want to talk about a lot. I mean, I think folks are doing a good job of talking about it who are talking about it. We've certainly tried to talk about it and talk more honestly about it. You know, I mean, you know, little inside baseball, right? A year ago when we would look at show topics, we would be like, yeah, abortion and guns. Do we really want to like, is that what we want to talk about on the podcast? Because we're trying to be a little bit more, you know, kind of lighter, right, with what we talk about. And that's really hard to do with certain topics. But then at some point in time you go, well, if we got to talk about it, right? We have to. And so I think people are doing a better job with that. And I guess I would agree with you if the distinctions become more of what's talked about, because I think there is still that narrative out there. And when I talked to the Lake Area Democrats, I did a recording. I haven't put it out mostly because I haven't had a chance to go back through the audio. And I think my audio is really bad in it, but we'll see if I can get it out. But it was two older guys, right? Not old guys, but older guys. And they both talked about it in terms of, I can't talk about abortion around here and say, I think all abortion is good. I can't do it. Like, it doesn't sell. I can't convince people with that argument. And but as a Democrat, I also can't then be a part of the party, you know, who's you know, forces you to sort of take this path. And so kind of that catch-22 of the issue. But I do think that if we can not have that argument, but be able to help folks understand that distinction of, look, when we say abortion, you know, it conjures up this particular image for a lot of people. Abortion just means the termination of whatever is occurring, right? If you and I, in the middle of this show, if we just stopped doing it and I closed my computer and walked away, that's an aborted podcast, right? It's this word that means a very specific thing that's been applied to one thing, to mean one thing, and the most heinous, hardest to you know, stomach version of that one thing. And so if you're able to walk that back and go, look, that's a tiny percentage of what we're talking about here. What we're talking about is the woman who, I just heard a story of a local woman who was in her, I think, 32nd or 33rd week, right? And had complications, rushed to the hospital, horrible things are happening. They were very lucky. They were able to save the baby and save her. That's amazing. But if they hadn't, that would have been an abortion, right?
Right.
And in Texas, she would have been a felon. And in lots of other states, she would have been a felon once, you know, once this law goes into place. And so it's that kind of stuff paired with the IVF stuff that I think people have to understand. You know, if you do IVF and it takes one, two, three, four, five, six chances, right, to get there, well, every single one of those that doesn't result in a birth is an abortion.
Right.
It is, by definition.
Yeah.
So I think that can change the concept. But the interesting part of that is, you know, what do you think? Does Biden have the power to change that conversation? Because right now, like, the GOP leads a generic ballot on the 538 aggregates. Biden's been holding pretty, we've looked at it several times, right? He's at 41.3 right now on the 538 aggregate. He's pretty much been holding at 40 and a half to 42 and a half, you know, within that 2-point range since I mean, December 1st, mid-November. That's really been his.
When inflation started really picking up is when his,
Yeah, you can look at August, late August is when it is the last time he was above. August 28th, he was at 47.2 approval. And that was the last time he was above his disapproved. So I guess the question to me is like, does he have the power to change the Overton window here, change, you know, what people are looking at and shift that? Or is it something that's going to have to happen on, is it a ground game thing?
Right. I think it's absolutely a ground game thing. And I heard someone else on Washington Week, I don't know if it's Susan Page or not, but mentioning what we talked about, which is all of the state legislative races, which are going to be extremely important, because what this court decision does is puts this question to the states.
That's right.
So I think that it is going to be a lot about hustle on the ground. That's going to decide who wins and kind of what the conversation is. You know, when I think about Biden, he did say, the answer to this is elect Democrats. Democrats, you know, go to that often. and he's been trying to make this case that Putin is to blame for high prices. You know, he's been peddling that for a little while. If I were him, I would be ready to change the tune. But I don't know what kind of impact it would have. Yeah,
it does. It does maybe, you know, speak to, you know, because I think this is false. You've said it's true. I think it's false. But I can see, you know, the Ukrainian issue, even that got swallowed up by inflation, right? And you would think that that could carry it. But inflation, the Ukrainian stuff is not on your mind at 7:15 in the morning when you stop at Casey's, you know, to get a slice of breakfast pizza and fill your tank. And you come out after grabbing your breakfast pizza and you look at the, you know, the thing on the top of the on the top of the pump, and you're just like, what?
Right.
What did I just pay?
Well, and this you're making me understand kind of the difference. I've always thought Biden's campaigns were really well consulted. You could always tell that he has really expensive people, whoever won with Obama and Biden, you know, before, and, you know, real smarty pants types. And it was all really great. You know, he won.
Yeah.
But now you are seeing, you know, the difference between people who live in the real world and people who have only ever lived in an Ivy League sort of high income world, because
where $3 a gallon gas and $5 a gallon gas sucks, but it doesn't matter.
Right. You keep doing it and
they're not making just different decisions about what they can and can't buy. They're just like, "Bugh, this is more expensive."
Right. Right. Yeah. And they
don't really care.
And they're not They don't care about the reason, you know, they're not listening, you know, because they have other stuff going on. And, but when you look at polls, when you have an unlimited money, you do a lot of polling. And so what polls are telling people today is that people are most upset about gas prices and inflation. And then the Ukraine issue polls, you know, people hate Putin, love Ukraine and Zelensky.
Right.
So you can just see how the White House is like, I know what we need to do. We need to just really make sure that, you know,
we tie inflation to Putin.
Right. Because that's their way out. And it has
Doesn't work, though. Like, it doesn't appear to be working. Maybe over time it works.
If I hear someone from the White House mention Ukraine's role in the wheat economy, you know, that makes me upset. Yeah.
It is the one thing that does cross over, because, like, I've seen some Republicans on Twitter talking about, you know, they want to blame the Biden administration for rising costs for farmers on fertilizer. But it's actually, there really is a direct tie to the Ukrainian conflict, Russia's invasion, to fertilizer costs. Like, it's a direct, it's not even one of those you have to do gymnastics on. It's a straight line to that has caused a spike in fertilizer prices for domestic U.S. farming.
Right.
And that really isn't Biden's fault. It just isn't.
Right.
But they neither want to he try nor the Republicans. Him to that.
Go ahead. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I played golf on Friday with a friend. So this guy, he's about our age. He's a couple years younger than us, but this guy's a veteran, Marine, right? He's a small business owner, right? This guy is what I think of what a lot of Republicans think of as like their demo, right? Their core demo.
Right.
and the kind of guy that I think a lot of Democrats write off because they just sort of, they just see him as like, well, we can't reach this guy. But he's a really good example to me of, you know, the kind of person. I know he listens to the show, so shout out, you know who you are. I won't name drop just because, but he's a really good example to me of exactly the person that Biden could talk to if he would just, like you say, without the smarty pants stuff, like if he would just talk like a regular human being, that this is the kind of person that's there to listen to that. But he's also exactly the type of person that just like you or I is, it, you know, learned the phrase at a young age, don't piss on my leg and tell me it's raining. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, just don't treat me that way. And so, you know, it flip flops both ways. So when, you know, when the Republicans say it's Biden's fault that fertilizer is high, right? No, but by the flip side of that coin, when Biden says the reason we're in this mess is because of Donald Trump with his Russia policy, these are the same people that are going to say, no. It's you and Trump and Obama and Bush. Right. This is not something that happened overnight.
Right. This electing Democrats doesn't end the conflict and then free up our fertilizer markets again.
No.
You know, and that's the problem for Democrats. You know, they want to be attached to the popular position, but there's too many steps to get back to voting for the Democrats.
Bingo. There it is. That was so succinctly said. I think we just have to move on from here. So, all right. So we're split on the true false, but that's fun. That's why we need Rachel. She would be the deciding voter.
Right.
So damn. We'll see.
Yeah. No.
All right. Yeah, no. this one. So Mark Kumra has been really fun to follow on Twitter because he does a good job of just digging into MEC reports and stuff like that and just popping little things that seem innocuous to most, but that are hilarious. So at Mark Kumra with K, he tweeted, well, isn't this interesting? Historically, August Bush III only writes checks to this size to Steve Ellman and Lyda Crewson. And he's just dumped $22,400 into Jane PAC, which is for St. Louis Democrat Jane Duker, who is running for county executive in St. Louis County. Now, for those of you who are not in St. Louis politics, and I'm really not, but this matters because of what it represents in Missouri politics larger and I think the Democratic Party at large, because Augie Bush III is not a noted Democratic donor, right? His sibling now is running for the Senate as a Democrat. But this is the same guy who met with George Hawley, a few months ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's very interesting because it's this old guard Democrat group, that are sort of trying to stave off. And if for folks who haven't seen the map that's coming out of Missouri, appears to be coming out of Missouri legislature for the congressional redistricting, they've done exactly what we talked about, which is they've taken the second district and they've crept it up into the first district so that they can pull some of that white liberal base that is supporting Corey away.
Right.
Okay. Bush and pull that away and make that a more competitive district. really, really, really wild stuff going on out there. So that's kind of where the Yano comes from. It's just like, it just looks dirty to me in St. Louis. Like what's going on with all this stuff.
Well, and I didn't know who Jane Duker was, but I guess she is a lawyer for the St. Louis Police Union. Is that right?
Yeah, the FOP, yeah.
Yeah, so it looks like we're probably going to have another super, like, racially charged
right.
election in St. Louis, I would guess. I wonder what kind of ads Jane PAC is going to start putting out. It makes me sick probably just thinking about it.
It's interesting to follow her on Twitter because she's one of those Democrats that it's like, what party are you? I can't tell, because sometimes she'll post stuff where it's like, oh, okay. And then she posts other stuff where it's like, what? Like, where is this coming from? She really hates, you know, some of the other county executive people. And obviously, you know, she works for, you know, the police. So she posts a lot of pro-police stuff. But like Sam Page, she's just after him. Like, he's this county executive that some people love him, some people don't, and she really hates him, and she's going after his throat. But it's just more, to me, it's just more telling of, like, you know, how do you get, if you're a state like Missouri, and we're going, okay, how do you break a supermajority? How do you have a competitive state again? How do you have more than the sound of one hand clapping? Is it August Bush III cutting checks to, you know, old guard Democrats,
police union lawyers,
right? Like, who appear to be, you know, in line with old school St. Louis segregationist policies, like, as opposed to, you know, progressive Democrats, like, or like, they're running scared of Cory. She's terrified. Nuts.
Yeah. And it's like, if Jane Duker wins a Democratic primary in St. Louis, like, it would be nuts. You know, that would be such a step backwards.
Right. That's exactly
the police unions, you know, for this whole, I know it's the we'll keep it really short. The police unions have a role to play, I guess. Yeah.
In labor relations for the police with their employer, the city or the county.
Yeah. But they have no fucking role to play in this discussion we're having in this country right now about, like, how do we keep police from breaking the law and hurting people so much?
Right.
And what do we do about all these bad police? Like, how do we make things really safer when there are so many violent and, you know, unlawful things happening inside the police? So,
and that, that
a police union lawyer
be,
is not wanting to move forward on
right. That will always be anathema, you know, as far as the discussion goes for the police union, and it should be right. That their position is to advance the, you know, the working conditions and make things as good as possible.
Make it so you can't fire a cop. Like, right. That would be their number one job. Literally.
Exactly. That's their whole job. Yeah. Make it so you can't fire a cop. It's exactly right. So it's going to be really hard to sit down and have a rational conversation about how do we make sure that we don't have, you know, a George Floyd situation happening on a regular basis with that group. It just doesn't make sense. Like, they're just not in line. They're with what it means. So, but yeah, I just thought that was interesting. It's not, if you're outside of Missouri, it probably doesn't mean a whole lot, but it's worth looking up. You know, you can go to the FEC pages and the Missouri Ethics Commission pages and look at the money that August Bush III gives out and see it's interesting, to say the least. So yeah, that's the end. Yeah, no. Let's move on to the buy sell. All right, the buy sell. And this one, this kind of goes with the true false, but it's a different version, I guess. So the buy sell is that Democrats can spend their way to a win in November in these midterms. So they announced the other day, the party announced that they were reserving $33 million specifically for Senate races. Which is a big deal. It's not that much money when you talk about the number of competitive Senate races that are out there. But it does matter. So what do you think? Buy or sell that Democrats can spend enough money to overcome the problems that they're dealing with to see the results, and especially in these Senate campaigns.
Right. Yeah, I would buy that. I think they're not going to have any problem keeping up with Republicans in terms of money. And that's kind of how I think about it. You know, like, money has a point of diminishing returns for sure, especially when you're using it on TV ads, which so much of this is going to be on TV ads and digital ads, mail and things.
Yeah.
But you don't want to be on any battlefield, whether it's texts or TV or mail or social media. You don't want to be the one spending less. You know, that's sure. You're now at a disadvantage and you could lose the whole damn thing because they spent more than you in one place.
Yeah.
So I think abortion, again, this Dobbs decision really should galvanize. I think that the Democrats will have a better year than people thought before, but it's going to be so ugly this year. The ads are going to be insanely ugly. The ground game is going to matter a lot more, talking to real people and getting out the vote.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess if you're looking at it, like, let's make a hierarchy here, right? So there's no presidential, right? It's all congressional and statewide stuff. So do you think that there's a point, is it like the Senate races, they'll definitely be able to spend enough to hold the Senate, basically, maybe even flip a seat? The House races is going to be really tight, but they can probably spend enough to potentially hold the House. And then after that, No. Like, is there a point at which you think there's no way they can spend enough money?
There's no more coattails. Yeah. Yeah. And what really comes into play here is candidate quality, I think.
Sure.
For, you know, because there's 435 congressional seats. So just in general, like if the Democrats, again, you know, head to head, you know, one by one going through these races, like the Democrats can only lose 4 seats or 3 seats, I think. And yeah. Kevin McCarthy is going to be the next speaker.
It's wild.
So, yeah. yeah, it's.
Yeah, I guess a state like Missouri. A state like Missouri is a good example for that. Like, you know, we've got this huge Senate race in Missouri. There's this open question, and all of the latest polling tells us that on both sides of this thing, you are, you know, 33% chance probably at best that you got the right answer. Like, it maybe is a little clearer on the Democratic side, but even then, depends on, you know, which version of the margin of error is used in the polling and how many folks are you including in the polling and what is it, you know, I think we're going to, I tell you what we're going to learn in Missouri. We're going to learn whether or not in a modern political campaign in a statewide race, can you overcome money deficits with true ground games?
Right.
Over time. Like, I think we're going to find out an answer to that, or, you know, if there's at least a value to that. But let's say, for example, in that race, let's say it's Greitens versus Kuntz. Okay. Which is what Lucas Kuntz very much would like to have happen in Missouri.
Right.
Does that suddenly make that the kind of race where the Democratic Party goes, hey, turn the spigot on, right? We're going to drop a boatload of cash into Missouri between August 4th and November 8th, whenever the election is in 2022. And suddenly this state, which has a ton of, by the way, like quality Democrats running for office, some, a lot of them for the first time, there was a huge, right, a good push this year of folks coming out in Missouri. You know, the DNC has already devoted a little bit more money to Missouri to open some field offices, a tiny amount of money, but to open some field offices, right? So there's already a little bit of positive momentum there, which, you know, the fact that there's more money tells me somebody somewhere looked at what's going on and went, you know, some number changed,
right?
Because
right?
why else would they have dropped any money here other than to get somebody to shut up, I guess. Maybe it was us. I don't know.
Well, in Missouri, you know, Claire McCaskill won her seat with Todd Legitimate Rape Aiken
right.
in 2012. And right. then she lost against Josh Hawley, who, you know, obviously deeply flawed, but, you know, not so bad that she was able to knock him off.
Right.
And I think that's what DNC people are seeing in Greitens. But
was yeah, he at I Aiken, don't, basically.
Right, right. Yeah. And so if he can win the nomination, then I think there will be a bunch of money, but it is hard to imagine, you know, neither Trudy nor Lucas have ever won statewide or anybody on right. the on the Democratic Nobody, tickets. Yeah. yeah. So I don't see Chuck Schumer like really digging deep unless one of them really starts to show some spark. But I think like Lucas would have to raise the money on his own and he'd have to get up to like Jamie Harrison kind of numbers in South Carolina. Like he would have to put up. Yeah. Like his third quarter would have to be just insane. Like
4 or 5 million.
Right. Yeah. And then the fourth quarter doesn't matter because then it's October right. and then November.
It will be interesting because, you know, when Trudy Bush Valentine joined the race, when we talked about the first time, I said, Lucas is done. I said, his fundraising's done. It's going to dry up. I said by Memorial Day, I think this race has changed. He's held on a lot better than I expected. And there still seems to be some money there. So maybe he's, you know, whether they're reaching outside of the state more, or maybe they're, you know, they're trying to put in their emails because they knew that they were getting tagged on that. And so they were able to flip the emails and say, oh, look, no, we've got all this in-state donation too. You know, it's not all out of state, but at some point in time, it's like, I mean, do you have $10 million? Where did it come from? Becomes less of a question, right? If you have the money or not. You know, Toter doesn't have the money. And now obviously, you know, we don't know Q3, so maybe he's got more now than he had. But, you know, when you look at the race that way, can can the Dems spend their way? Do you buy that? Right. I do buy that in a state like Missouri, where if that $33 million Senate race money, you know, if it's, if Fetterman wins, who Fetterman just had a stroke. Apparently it was not a, like a big stroke. It was like, he strikes me as the kind of guy. He was like, he's like an SNL character, right?
Right.
He's just like that Bill Preston. There. Yeah.
That
yeah.
makes a baker's dozen for me.
Exactly. Like he's just giving a speech. He's like, well, yeah. A
little stroke.
A little stroke there. Anyway.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I like
runs
talking
in
about
my family, you know.
But a guy like a race like that, and same with Tim Ryan, that's where a ton of money could make a huge difference, because like Fetterman is stumping all around these rural areas.
Yeah.
And I want to talk a little bit about like the articles. There's still like hand wringing from Democrats. Gosh, I don't know why we love like wetting the bed so much. Like I can't stop reading yes. articles about John Fetterman. Literally just some Democrats are worried that it's like, Jesus, do we have to keep writing this?
They're worried that John Fetterman is out there just telling the truth to people.
Right.
Like,
well, they're,
I love Fetterman. It was like the first time I saw anything by him, I was just like, yeah, that's exactly how I talk.
This like, lady,
it just makes sense.
One of the quotes, the person, the reporter says that they stopped someone outside of a Whole Foods in a wealthy suburb. And the person's fear about Fetterman was that people might not think he's polished enough. And like, when we go to the question of the election, right? How many people are asking themselves that when they walk into the voting booth? Zero.
God. Oh my God.
And like this thing, people say, well, there's,
I just do the tip out there. If you work in public opinion polling and you're trying to figure out where should I be gauging voter interest in a state like Pennsylvania or Missouri or Tennessee, the parking lot of a Whole Foods in a wealthy white neighborhood is the worst possible place you
try the parking lot of a Flyers game.
Yes.
You know,
yes, exactly. A Flyers Penguins. Game.
Yeah.
How about the Aldi parking lot?
Right.
How about like, let's go with the Walmart.
The Crayola factory.
It's yeah,
real,
there you go.
Real
yeah.
America.
Yes.
But
yeah, there's plenty of better places to pull people than the parking lot of a Whole Foods.
Right.
Come well, on.
And in contrast, they talk about him doing all of these campaign stops in breweries and bars in outlying areas and people showing up. And we know that the Republicans' strategy has been to run up the score in rural counties that used to vote, like 30 to 70 for the Republicans. You know, the Republicans want that to be 10 and 90.
Yes.
And like, they've been doing all the work to make it happen. And like guys like Fetterman, you know, there was this thing with the gun incident. They're saying, you know, like he stopped someone with a gun and is this going to hurt his chances? And will Republicans use it specifically? And it's like, yeah, I guess what would
Republicans happen? Are going to attack a guy for being
$20
million? A good guy with a gun.
Right. Let's spend $20 million on ads telling people in rural Pennsylvania that John Fetterman stopped someone with a shotgun when he was the mayor. See how that works.
Right. You may as well just like the ad may as well just be like, John Fetterman is a badass. Like you may as well make that the ad, because that's exactly how they're going to attack that guy.
And then the Democrats do have unlimited funds to spend in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, you know, and make sure that the base voters do get out on issues like abortion. And
well, it's part of the reason I get so frustrated with the Democratic Party, because Fetterman is to the rural white voter, right? As, you know, like Tim Scott, right? The reason why Republicans put Tim Scott front and center every chance they have, right? Because they know full well that demographically speaking, African-American voters in the United States are going to vote for Democrats.
Right.
Most of the time. Those numbers are like 85, 95%, right?
Exactly.
They also know that if you can change a 95% group to a 90% group, that you've just shifted a ton of votes. And that you don't have to win the group. It's not that they have to flip the entire group of the African-American voter. They don't have to take it from 95 to 50-50, but if they can take it from 95 to 82, they win the presidency. They win the Senate. They run the table, right? If they can take away 10% of that group. And that's something that a guy like Fetterman can do. You know, it's why I have such worries about a guy like Kuntz, or frankly, of Tree Bush Valentine in a state like Missouri, where it's like, when a guy like me, and look, I've finally got to meet Lucas in person. I've done the Zoom with him, and I'd love to talk with him again on here because I'd love to talk to him about this exact issue. I'd love to give him a chance to talk about this issue with folks in Missouri, because when I met Lucas Kuntz, he was exactly what I thought he was, right? He's exactly the kind of guy that a guy like me meets and just goes, yeah, whatever.
Slick politician.
I don't need this guy at all. Or
dime a dozen.
Yeah, I don't need this guy at all. Like, it just doesn't, it does nothing for me. I'm not impressed by the fact that he's tall. I'm not by, like, nothing about him. Like,
that's funny. He seems short in photos. It's usually,
yeah, he's pretty tall. He's tall? Yeah, he's over 6 foot. Yeah, for sure over 6 foot. Yeah, he's taller than I thought, for sure. But, like, nothing about that, I don't know. There's just nothing about him makes me, like, inspired. Like, there's nothing that makes me like, I got to get behind this guy. An empty shirt
is a term that I heard from a very conservative cousin of mine 20 years ago about John Edwards. I remember him saying, the guy's an empty shirt. And
perfect. John Edwards is a great comp, actually, to Lucas. Right. That's a great comp. He can hit the notes. He can run the plays. And to the right folks, I know there's plenty of folks who listen to the show that like Lucas, and I'm not saying that's bad to like him or anything. It's just that's, I'm the kind of guy that a Fetterman appeals to.
It's
going to
be hard for him to overcome such a deficit in a red state is the plain truth. John Edwards was a senator from North Carolina in a different time.
Right.
I don't think that would fly.
And I think I'm a pretty good barometer for like guys who vote Republican in a state like Missouri, in a red state, but are convincible, right? Because I'm not a Republican voter. I'm not a reliable Republican voter. Locally, I wind up voting for lots of Republicans because that's how local politics works still. I'll pull the Republican ballot. I'll probably wind up pulling it this August because of local races and stuff. Because there's just other stuff to vote on other than the national races. But I'm probably an 80-20, Democratic voter in my lifetime. I've definitely never voted for Republican for president. I don't think I've ever voted for Republican for Congress or the Senate, right? So, but from a like, what do I spend my time doing, right? We talked about the beginning, and I was at Herman this weekend, right? Friday night, and I was in Herman, and I was at a bar called the Loose Caboose. And if you want to know what people do you have to convince in the state of Missouri, it's the people at the Loose Caboose on Friday night in Herman. Right. Right. Herman,
which is 80 miles from St. Louis.
Yes. And let me tell you what, I don't think Lucas Kuntz would have done very well at the Loose Caboose in Herman.
I've lived in a lot of places and I've told many people how, when it comes to personal safety, I've felt more at risk in the parking lot of the Montgomery County High School or somewhere like outside the Loose Caboose than in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn.
100%. Because,
and I would bet Lucas Kuntz would absolutely be safer in Bed-Stuy than out at night in Herman.
Right. Whereas like I don't even think twice. I mean, you and I have, we've made these walks in towns like this. Like I don't even think twice, like walking through the alleyways of Herman to get to the BP, to buy some Swisher Sweets. Like
someone might fuck with you. That's
right. I know there's a possibility, but I also don't like for a second, it doesn't cross my mind is that like, it's going to be bad for me. Like I know that whoever it is, I'm going to be able to talk to that person. And we're going to be fine. Even if we disagree on everything in the world, like I'm going to be able to talk with them. I don't know. I guess that's why I struggle with this one and why I wanted to put it on the buy sell. Cause it's just hard for me to imagine that those folks, that the money's going to make enough of a difference for folks like that right now.
I think for someone like Tim Ryan, it makes a big difference.
Yeah.
For somebody like John Fetterman, it makes a big difference.
And those are the big ones. I mean, that's if Ryan can hold Ohio, then you got to assume all the rest of them have fallen into place and the Democrats have a 52 seat Senate. Well, 52 minus, the coal baron.
Right.
Out of West Virginia. Anyway. Yeah. Let's move on.
And now, the big one.
All right, the big one. There is still some democracy left in this world. This is pretty Missouri specific from an issue standpoint, but I think these issues represent, I think a lot of states are dealing with issues like this right now. And so I think it's like usual, Missouri becomes a nice representation of reality. We're still looking at marijuana legalization in Missouri. The legislature, you know, they spent a lot of time debating things that didn't matter at all. The Missouri state, by the way, if you're not in Missouri, if you want to feel good about your state, you should spend some time reading some coverage about the last 2 weeks of the session of the Missouri legislature. Did you catch any of that, Sean?
No, I was just really the only way that I heard about it was being on conference calls with Team Trish and being like, yeah, she's in a black hole over there. Yeah. We don't know.
Yeah.
We'll get her back soon. But that's really all I kept up with.
They're killing bills that are good. Like my local state senator, Denny Hoskins, he kills the internet gambling bill to allow for sports gambling.
Oh, wow. Jesus.
Yeah, he killed that because of video lottery terminals at truck stops.
Oh, right.
And it's like, it's so dumb.
I would much rather be able to bet on video poker in a truck stop than use my phone to bet on the Chiefs. I don't know about you, but
I'd like to do both. And more importantly, I don't understand. When did the Republican Party become the party of, I really like freedom for some of you? Like, it's just, it annoys the shit out of me because this issue is so simple. The Chiefs are ready to build a new stadium. The Chiefs are looking for a bedfellow. They're looking for as much money as they can possibly get out of a deal to build a new stadium. And it's going to happen in the next decade. And if it's legal to gamble in Kansas and it's not legal to gamble in Missouri, I will bet you my first bet that I can make in Kansas, when I drive across the state line and I place my bet and I buy gas in Kansas and I buy something from the store, from the gas station in Kansas, and I give them my tax money in Kansas and all of those things happen in Kansas. And then when I win that bet and I get that income and it's my state income tax in the state of Kansas, and they get all of that money that we don't get in Missouri, because we get to do that now across the state line, just like they do out of St. Louis and go into Illinois, just like they do in northern Missouri and go up into Iowa, because it's legal in all those states. And it's really, really stupid. It's really, 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 really stupid. And so instead of debating which marijuana bill might be able to work or debating what we actually need for schools or anything like that, they talked about critical race theory. They talked about four trans athletes. They shamed trans people in general. They attacked people on that stuff, and they killed sports gambling because one senator wanted to kill sports gambling. And it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. But I say all of that to say that we still have some democracy in Missouri because we have marijuana legalization and ranked choice voting. Folks, ranked choice voting, they're coming to the initiative petition process this fall. It's going to
start
be
your
awesome.
Engines.
Start your engines. It's going to be great. And the reason that they made it is that they got a ton of signatures. And during this legislative session, again, instead of figuring out the sports gambling, you know what the Missouri GOP tried to do, Sean? Instead of figuring out sports gambling, they tried to kill initiative petitions. What do you think about that?
Yeah. Jeez. Right. Yeah. Government nerds. Leave it alone.
Like, of all the things,
of the one way that people can actually make their voice heard in this state. Yeah. Yeah. Jeez.
One of my favorite Latin phrases they use it in West Wing, and it's just a great Latin phrase, right? Vox populi, vox Dei.
Right.
The voice of the people is the voice of God. And they don't want to hear the voice of the people because the people be like, yo, we don't like what you're doing. We want different things to happen.
This seems dumb. Yeah. Like, why are you doing
the people
this?
Are like, we want to expand Medicaid. And they're like, do you really though? And they're like, yeah, we do. We voted.
Yeah. Our
for
hospitals
it.
Are closing because nobody can pay for care. And
yeah. So they tried to kill the initiative petitions this cycle. So there's two initiative petitions that appear to be making it. One for marijuana legalization, one for ranked choice voting. We've talked about ranked choice voting on the show. In fact, I think, Sean, I think your record on the show is that it will never happen in Missouri.
Right.
And here it is. It might happen. Who knows?
I would love to see it happen. Yeah. I guess the way it works is there's a big primary, and is that when four people kind of move forward to get on the general election ballot?
I think that's right. looking for. Yeah, that sounds right. So here's a Missouri Independent story that does a good job laying out. So if it was in place this year, there would be four candidates advancing in the statewide contest for U.S. Senate, where 21 Republicans, 11 Democrats, one Libertarian, and one Constitutional Party have filed. State auditor has four candidates have filed total. And there's at least four candidates in all eight congressional districts, six of the 17 state Senate races, and 13 of the 163 Missouri House contests. So basically, it would take our Senate group, right? And I think we would wind up with, like, you know, one of the Erics, Vicky Hartzler, right, and Lucas Kuntz, and then fill in the blank, right? I think that would be probably what we would have. And then you would have a four-person slate to vote on, right, at that point. But it's beautiful, right, because it'd give you the ability to go in and say, okay, I'm voting for... You know, if I'm a Democratic voter in Missouri and I can go in and say, I'm going to vote for Lucas Kuntz, I'm going to vote for Spencer Toter, I'm going to vote for Trudy Bush Valentine, and then I'm going to vote for Eric Schmidt, right? Because Greitens is a crazy person. Vicky Hartzler is, you know, a full-blown bigot. And I think Eric Schmidt's just been playing politics. Like, I think he just did a bad job of playing politics with all of his school lawsuits and all that stuff and his COVID warrior bullshit. Like, I don't think that's really who he is. And I don't think that's who he'll be as a senator. So I'll get to put him as my fourth, because if I'm get to weigh in on the Republican side while weighing in on the Democratic side, that's right, basically what ranked choice voting would.
It's like it's like a huge jungle primary, yeah, where four people get to advance instead of two.
Yeah.
And there's no more partisan primaries. There's not a Democrat, right, and a Republican primary. There's one big primary that four people can advance from. Yeah. And I guess the idea is that maybe some third or fourth person would be some kind of new perspective that
opens
could
the door up
win
for potential third parties.
Right.
For sure. Nonpartisan candidates. And it, you know, we're already in a state like Missouri where we don't have, I don't have to register, right? I don't have to be a registered Republican. I don't have to be a registered Democrat. I just have to be a registered voter. And I can show up and I can say, give me the Democratic ballot, give me the Republican ballot. And I don't have to prove any participation with their selection process prior to that moment in time.
Right.
I can just go, boop. I don't even have to know who's running. I can just, right, say, yep, I voted straight ticket Democrat my whole life. But you know what? This primary, feeling saucy, I'm going to vote in the Republican primary.
Right.
And they,
right,
can let you do that. So, like, is that, you know, is that better than ranked choice voting, or is ranked choice voting better than, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting if nothing else.
Yeah, no, for sure. And we'll know, like, if any kind of Democrats win statewide, I think that would be a huge sign.
And the Republicans were very specifically fighting against ranked choice voting. I mean, gotcha, strongly fighting against ranked choice voting.
Right. I was looking at, back to the betting stuff.
Yeah.
So Colorado, you know, these states that do it are eager to let people know how much money they get. So it's not, right, hard to find. just in tax revenue, it's been almost $18 million for Colorado, which is about the same size as Missouri.
Yeah. Almost exactly the same number of people.
Right. About 6
I would guess Colorado's tourism is probably a little bit better than Missouri's.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Just slightly.
That is definitely true. Yeah, there was about $6 billion in wagers made in Colorado. Great. $6.5 billion in sports wagers, and then the gross revenue is $408 million.
So $1,000 per person, basically.
Right. Right.
$1,000 per person in your state.
That's the level of demand. Right.
Yeah. And they killed it. It's just baffling to me. It's so baffling to me. We have, especially because you've got the Chiefs, the Royals, the Cardinals. There's a new soccer team in St. Louis.
Right.
Right. They just, what, at the same time, and his name just escaped me. Let me see here. Missouri State 51st District, I'm pretty sure. Curtis Gregory. Curtis Gregory is a Missouri State representative. He's a Mizzou grad. He is, this will be our second reference to Bill Brasky. He is approximately 7'4" and 350 pounds like Bill Brasky. He's a massive human being. And he got a piece of legislation through this year that allowed for Mizzou to give out NIL deals, which are these college athlete deals for name, image, likeness, where they can now pay the athlete for that. And Eli Drinkwitz, the coach, had been getting a lot of buzz here in Missouri about his recruiting because he's been doing a pretty good job, even though they've been dog shit for years as a football team. But he's been recruiting really, really well. And this opens up a floodgate for him to be able to use booster money to recruit these kids who otherwise, you know, we both spent time at Mizzou. You did your undergrad there. I did my law school there. Columbia is a fine town, but if you're a five-star athlete, right? Yeah. There's some guy in Philadelphia who's like, hey, I can give you 50 grand a year, you know, if you come and play over here versus if there's some guy in Columbia, Missouri.
Right.
You're not going to Columbia.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not going to happen. So they got that through, which is huge, but not this other thing, which would just make, by the way, would make that even easier for Mizzou because it would boost everybody's tax revenue. It would, like, you want to talk about a rising tide that raises all ships, and they're not even making a moralistic argument against it.
Oh, really? Right. Yeah. What is the argument against? Yeah. We're just, yeah.
Just that it's, that it's not taking care of all the issues at once. It's not perfect.
We have other things to do, basically, kind of. Yeah, gotcha. Yeah.
It's just insane. It's just insane to me. So, yeah, in a state where the roads are crumbling, the schools are going to 4 day a week because they don't have enough funding. Then the number one sports team, because I'm going to say the Chiefs are a bigger team in Missouri right now than the Cardinals, right now.
Okay.
The number one sports franchise is flirting with Kansas to leave the state.
Right.
I mean,
way fewer than 6 million people.
Should
be a slam dunk for Missouri to keep the team.
Right. It should be so easy to do. But they look across the aisle and they see Sporting Kansas City and they see the Speedway and the Hollywood Casino that's right there and the giant ass Nebraska Furniture Mart that's right there and all the stuff that's around it. And
I love the Dwight D. Eisenhower Presidential Museum and Library in Abilene, but that's quite far from what we're talking
about. Yeah, but you know what? While you're taking in the Dwight D. Eisenhower Presidential Library in Abilene, you know what you can do?
What's that?
Place a bet on the Chiefs.
There you go. Right there in the parking lot. Oh, my gosh. Next time I will.
Hey, man, thanks for joining me. This was fun, but Rachel, we miss you, and hope you had a great birthday, and we'll catch her next week, and Thanks for stopping by, folks.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And legalize it. Marijuana, that
just
is.
Just legalize it.
Legalize it.
Yeah, I don't even think we... Yeah, that's the conversation on marijuana. Lee. Just stop. Just come on. Ugh.
The Heartland Pod is a production of Midmap Media, LLC. Follow us on Twitter with @TheHeartlandPod. With email, you can reach us, heartlandpod2020@gmail.com, online with heartlandpod.com. Subscribe, and please sign up for our Patreon with patreon.com/heartlandpod. Become a podhead or an official podgressive today and unlock all of our content. See you at the next show.